have glasses. I'll acknowledge this, that my time is probably going to come. I hope it doesn't. That would be great if I never had to get glasses, because I recognize that people that do, how hard it is, because you've got to remember your keys, your cell phone, and those all get lost. You know, I wonder how many here, how many of you lose your TV remotes sometimes. You know, I almost have to have a list before I leave. Last time that I was here, believe it or not, I forgot my cell phone. So I left my cell phone at my in-laws, and that's like your connection to everyone. So I had to make an extra trip to come up to get my cell phone that following week. But it's just extra things that we have to remember all the time. So I'm looking at glasses. I'm going, really? There's another thing that I have to remember. And many of you, I would venture safely to say you probably have maybe two or even three sets of glasses. My guess would be, because we tend to misplace them or lose them or forget where we put them. It's just, I've watched this. It's typical on what happens, and I'm not looking forward to that. But what I realize, too, is when you eventually start to getting glasses, that it doesn't get any better. These glasses don't seem to strengthen your eyes, and that's where I kind of resist at times. I said, I want my eyes to exercise. My wife will say, well, are you going to put on some sunglasses? I said, no, I'm going to take this stuff. I want my eyes to get stronger. Now, whether that's the case or not, you know, I'm not really sure. I try not. Sometimes I'll have to use them because of the glare. But I know a certain amount of sunlight is also good for us. But, you know, we're just physical, aren't we? And once you get glasses, it seems that the next time that you go in, they have to get thicker. And this is one of those things that it just doesn't seem to get any better. Now, I want to give you some hope here. Because not only are you going to have to, you're going to toss away your glasses at the resurrection, at the return of Jesus Christ, and your field of vision is going to be so wonderful, but there's something opposite that happens in the spiritual nature, isn't there? In the spiritual dimension, our sight ought to get better. Better. So I know in reflection, I went through this topic that I gave somewhere around 2011 and decided to bring it back because of the importance to see, where have we come with this? Have you been able to see any better since I last broached this topic all the way back in 2011? As Mr. Horchek said, what have we learned even in hindsight from this past year? Have we been able to take a look? Have we been able to see things better? And my point is, we better not slough off the things that are taking place. Now, when I say I didn't listen to much of the news, it's not that I don't listen to it. It's just that I get enough of the same topic that's constantly being brought up. So you can pretty much get 5 or 10 minutes of the news, and then it's going to pretty much repeat all day. And so there's enough that we can go through. And then you've got to recognize, as it starts to get you down, make sure that you listen to some uplifting music. You know, I've got, because of the car that I just bought, it usually comes with a trial edition of a satellite radio. And occasionally I've gone over to the comedy station and listened to the comedy. And the station that I have it on is supposedly clean comedy, which it has been. There are other stations that doesn't have the clean stuff. But I found myself not really laughing. It's just not funny. There's not many jokes out there that people have that are really funny. So I'll listen to one and they might go on for 5 minutes and I'm just not laughing. It's just not funny at all. So I find out it's very interesting. Now, there are some that are pretty humorous, but others just go, I wonder where their viewpoint is on things that they have to laugh with. And it's almost like some people feel that they have to laugh at certain things, even if they're not funny. So it's interesting, the perspective on what we learn and what we see in different areas of human life. So the last time we were taking a look at going back and looking at things, and to me it's exciting in some cases, not all. It can be painful as we look back. We've all suffered some painful experiences because of things that we've gone through. Now, for the parents here, I'd like to ask, you know, when you look back in a sense and you were teaching your kids, hopefully, not to make the same mistakes that you did. You know, hopefully we would sit down and go, I hope you're not going to make the same mistakes. Do you remember maybe your kids stating at one point that things are different now? It's not the same. You know, I reflect on that, and I cannot remember the same statement that I made, but I'm sure that if I didn't say it, it was probably in my head. You know, my parents had gone through the days of, what are some of the names? Tony Bennett, you know Humphrey Bogart. That day and age, things are different. Things are different. We've got, today's day and age. In fact, the generation, my kids' generation is a man named Michael Bublé, if you've heard of him before. Almost like a Frank Sinatra-type singer. Very good. We listened to some of it, yesterday in preparation for the Sabbath. Really nice, some nice classical music. But it's different. You know, it's a different age. But as we look at it overall, can we come to the conclusion that nothing is really different? It's really the same stuff, just recycled, but maybe in a different package. It's in a different day and age. We wear different clothes, but it's the same attitudes. And that's why when we look all the way back at what the Israelites went through, and we kind of classify that, maybe it was different, but it's really not. Because people still murmur today, don't they? And I brought up different examples of where we've all probably murmured in one way or another. And saying within that, how do we look at that? Because it's not that you have to just zip it and say nothing. There's always ways to deal with things and take care of things. I know probably within this congregation, there's been talk of whether it's been too cold or too hot within a facility that you meet in. And where there's legitimate concerns, and it can be brought up, how do you take care of that? You turn the heat up, and somebody's going, I'm just burning up in here. You turn it down, and people go, I'm freezing in here. So it's almost like the story of the three bears. How do you get it just right? It's very difficult, isn't it? Just by one element that's some kind of physical that we have to deal with sometimes. So we find that really literally within our own congregations locally, and then even within our own families. How do we deal with these things? And what is God really looking at when we're supposed to be learning and growing? That there's elements, I've learned, that when I see a problem or when I hear of a problem, I'll try to find the person responsible that can maybe change it or help with that, and then try to give it in such a way that it's well received. It's not condemning. I've noticed for years, for instance, throughout the churches and within the Feast of Tabernacles, it's very difficult with sound, isn't it? It's always been difficult with sound. When I look at the feast and I see these guys that are doing the song boards, I talked to William Beach, who's kind of over the entire thing. He's finding it harder to get sound people because it's so difficult to do. It's going to be too loud for someone. With all the cords and everything that's run to try to get it just right, and then you've got to deal with different convention centers where the sound bounces off of different walls in different ways. It's very, very difficult. And I'll look at those guys and I'll just go, I really feel bad for them. I remember the Feast of Tabernacles some years ago. It was in Snowshoe. And my wife and I were prepared to do special music for that service that day. And we got up. We were there on stage to do our sound check at 8:30. Went through the sound check. Everything worked out. It was fine. There during services, the sermonette person is giving the sermonette, and I heard a pop in the sound system. And I looked at my wife, and I said, uh-oh. Something's, because I looked over at the soundboard and I saw the guys scrambling frantically to try to figure out what was going on. I got up and I tried to figure out, where did that pop come from? What was happening? And so you just try to move through it. We got on stage to do our special music, and none of our voices came out at all. And the sound guys back there trying to do this, and you know, somebody could have got all upset. And you realize things happen, don't they? You know, I didn't see the sound technician back there taking a sledgehammer during the sermonette going, I don't like this service anymore. Pow, I'm going to destroy this and cause a trial and a problem for everybody. What I found out is that a channel blew. there was an entire channel that blew, and unless you really know that that happens, it's with so many components. Look at a big soundboard. I look at all those knobs, and I'm going, how do they do this? It can be so complicated sometimes. So that happened, and you just work through it. But there's always an opportunity that's given to us, not necessarily directly by God. He allows things to happen to us for us to grow and to build character. So we look at those things such as the murmurings. We look at the things called idolatry and try to bring it up to this age and say, you know, what's important for us right now? The questions, certain questions even came up. And I'm not saying there's an exact way to handle this, but over the years we've looked at different things and such things as graduations, maybe on the Sabbath day. And I was thankful that we talked our kids through most of these things, that they didn't see graduations as such a big deal. So when my son's, youngest son's graduation was on the Sabbath up in Wisconsin, he just didn't go. It just wasn't a big deal to him. We look at things as bigger deals, and when I look back at my high school graduation, it wasn't a great big deal. I said, in many cases, I'll give an opportunity. I'll give you a hat, and I'll say something, and then you can throw your hat up in the air. You know, I know there's a celebration and sometimes a pomp and a ceremony, but when you relate that in teaching to what God's holy day is about, and we don't want to trample on that holy day, on that Sabbath day, and what's really more important to God. These are lessons that we learn and we grow in. Again, I don't want to push any of these down, you know, the throats of God's people, because we all sometimes come to the knowledge and conclusions in different ways within our own lives. And Christ always gently taught people, which I was always grateful for. But we've learned so many things. When we look back, this is another opportunity for us this year to take a look back at things that we've learned, to come before God and to be grateful. There's always opportunities that we have in this world to do finger pointing. And by the way, this is what this world is all about now. It's all about blaming everybody else. That's what we see constantly. And if we have our field of vision and focus to have that appropriate discernment and knowledge, we understand that this can creep into the church. We can be a finger-pointing and critical people unless we put ourselves in check. And this is a critical time that we're in now, that if we believe that we're in this time of the end time, that Satan is stirring it up even more. He's coming out more powerfully. And we've got to be able to see much more clearly than we ever did before the elements of what he's trying to do, that we'll be ready. It's to the point, really, when you look at the scriptures, it talks about not only the shattering of the power of God's people, but it speaks of the wearing down of the saints. I kind of feel that we're pretty close to that. I wonder how many people, I won't take a show of hands here, but how many people you would say, I am pretty worn down. You know, after all these years, and there's nothing wrong with that. You can actually, it's okay to feel worn out, but we have to make sure that we're also spiritually rejuvenated. I mean, we're all to the point where I think, you know, maybe years ago, we could have said, you know, you can take this world and let it be right now, and I'll have the kingdom of God come right now. Back when I was in my teens, or maybe in my early youth, I don't know if I would have been so fervent in saying that. There was more life to live. Things weren't all that bad. You weren't getting the constant news feeds like you were, and our nation wasn't in such the bondage and trouble that it is now. You had a president came along, and his name was Ronald Reagan, and for the most part, I thought that God had given the United States maybe a revival, a breath of fresh air just for a little while. Things seemed to be going at least okay. Maybe some of you had some severe trials going through that time as well, but can we look at it now and go, oh, God's kingdom, let it come right now. Now I think as we look, we are in trouble. And I've analyzed this before and shared it with you as far as some that I've regarded as having some interesting insights and wisdom that remarked about the future, that if we don't get another conservative end that we'll get another chief justice of the Supreme Court, and that will mean that this nation will tank. And I'm saying, this guy doesn't understand. We are already there. We're already there. It doesn't take another liberal justice of the Supreme Court to prevent us from going down. We're already going down. Can they not see that? How do you stop that? We're already going down financially. Can we not see that? It's already mentioned. It says at least we're 18, if not 19 trillion into debt. Okay, but wait a second. We're watching that go down, and it doesn't seem like there's any stopping. Nobody has come out and saying, by the way, I'm going to balance the budget. We're going to get out of this debt. There's some remarks made of that as we continue to go down. And if you know how it works, this means that the government prints more money, which makes the money that you have now worth less. And it takes a little while to impact unless you go shopping and you start to purchase foods that you go, wow, about a year ago, that wasn't... And you kind of get irritated. Why in the world do prices keep going up? Do you really want me to explain that? I just said that. But you don't see it happening. You're not there at the printing presses watching them just print more money. It's happening. That's why we're $18 trillion into debt with no stopping. So we're going down morally as well. And we can see that. We can watch that. But are things going to continue to go on? How long? And that's the part we don't know. How long? But this you can see is that we're morally tanking in this country. And there doesn't seem to be any stopping in sight. So we have to become spiritually in tune that we don't go down as well with this proverbial ship that's taking us down. The people of God must be sharpened. Our field of vision must get sharper even as our physical vision gets worse. As our physical bodies get more tired, we've got to become more spiritually energized. And there is a difference. You can be so worn down, you can be on your deathbed and know and understand God's plan. Wouldn't it be interesting if you knew you're about to take your last breath and you could actually be excited about it? Knowing that at that last breath, God, just please, maybe it's the night before, maybe you just actually wanted to see your family and give them some comfort and to say, you know, it's going to be okay. Pray that I take my last breath tonight so I can be there, because you know in the next split second of your memory, you're going to be resurrected to that resurrection that we're looking forward to. Look at what we're able to see. Look at what we're able to envision. So this is important for us to take a look at. Let's look at this another aspect of our field of vision. We previously studied and examined these two aspects of the hindsight and the insight. We've seen the need for both of those, the need to properly discern and how you can ask for it, just like Solomon did. How many of us really need that? The ability to be able to pare things down and to really take a look at it right. And not just that, but then with the information that we receive, how to appropriately deal with it. Because you can have a lot of information, but it might not be the right time to come out with it. It might not be the right time to say it. There's got to be a timing within many of these things too. There's got to be a tactfulness and a diplomacy. The need for hindsight to learn from the testimonies that are revealed in Scripture. And maybe because we're more excited about it. Maybe you had the opportunity to raise your children, but you can look back and say, I wish I would have had more gusto to it. I wish I would have sat them down and more regularly talked to them about situations, but because of how life was going, it was hard to even sit down and talk with them. Maybe we can do that with our grandkids. Maybe we can help give our kids a boost, because I always looked at it this way. I was very grateful for my children's grandparents, because we could give them what was called a double whammy. We could teach them. Now they can go to the grandparents and get that reinforcement of that teaching. Well, wait a second. You know, Mom and Dad said this. Yeah, it's different times. And maybe they went to grandma and grandpa, and grandma and grandpa said, it's not really different times. We've been through that too. Very interesting how God puts that into place to have the grandparents and the great-grandparents to reinforce those teachings that we try to give to our kids. Now let's come to the next really important element, the power, the ability to foresee. I foresaw something today that I decided to make a difference in the way that we got to London, Kentucky. Because of what happened before, I saw the need to take I-25 or Highway 25 instead of I-75. Now, everything looked really clear when we got onto I-75. There didn't seem to be a whole lot of traffic as we entered it. My wife had mentioned, well, there's not a lot of traffic. I kind of looked behind and I saw much more traffic that was still coming. And there were still semis and a lot of cars. And, you know, I had done this before. When I had come up before, there didn't seem to be a whole lot of traffic. But after 2 miles, when you could get off the exit to take Highway 25, everything came to a crawling stop. And for a half hour, we crawled at about 25 miles an hour. So I said, you know, it doesn't look like there's a lot of traffic, but I'm not going to go that way. So even physically, we make decisions, don't we? That was basically, in a sense, on the power of hindsight. But the power of foresight to see, if I get caught in that again, I do not feel like crawling at 5 miles an hour. I'd rather take a way that may be a little bit longer, maybe a little bit slower, but it's still going, at least at a regular pace. Now, these are physical examples that can be used. Where do we get that power that not even Daniel was given in some cases? We talk about this, don't we? We are excited about things that will happen in the future. But we don't know every point on the way that everything will unfold. And as you know, sometimes we'll take a look at our scriptures and we'll say, well, wait a second. I look at that a little bit differently now. This seems to be a different time in which this part of prophecy is occurring. We don't know all of these things. We know parts of it. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 4, 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 4. It'd be interesting to meet this Apostle Paul as well. Just don't forget, with the power to foresee here, understand that Peter's probably already gotten to Paul because he spoke about it. You know, Paul, his words and his writings were just always so difficult to understand. And they probably gave each other a hard time. So you and I probably won't need to do that. We'll come to Paul and maybe the first things out of our mouth will go, Paul, you know the problems that you caused in your writings? And Paul will say, I don't want to hear about it. I've already been told by how many people the problems that I caused by my writings. And maybe Jesus Christ will go, by the way, he's the one that I specifically picked for that purpose. Oh, okay. A lot of interesting things that will be happening in the future that when they do, by the way, maybe you'll smile because we talked about it. I remember when we talked about that and it came to pass. Maybe not exactly like that, but maybe a smile will come up from Paul. Because, you know, when you've made it to the kingdom, wow, there's going to be plenty of smiles, and it's almost like, who cares about that? We've all learned, and we've all grown. Now what's going on into the future? He said in verse 4, my speech and my preaching was not with enticing words of man's wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, that your faith should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. Howbeit, we speak wisdom among those who are perfect, or as we know, this is speaking of being perfected. We are being perfected. So that means that our spiritual eyesight should be getting better. Yet not the wisdom of this world, nor of the princes of this world that come to nothing. Once again, the more I look at the wisdom of this world, the more I see the futility and the flaws, and actually when they're trying to make things better, it's becoming worse. As I've mentioned before, there's constantly products that are coming out that are called new and improved. And yet our water sources are becoming more polluted. The environment is becoming more polluted. And I can't see a change in that in this world that we live in now. There's too much money that's involved to change it. But I do see this in the future and firmly believe this. If we take that proverbial walk through the yellow pages, one of the first things that you see in the yellow pages, do you know what it is? The first topic, if it's not been changed since then, but it's abortion. That's a concept that came up this week and somebody got in trouble for saying it, for talking about it as far as punishments and other things that deal with it. But how do you and I look at this? It's not going to be relevant in the future because it's not going to happen. There won't be abortion services. Take that one right out. One of the next one in the A's, you'll come up with, and this is not a condemnation of lawyers, by the way, but a huge one that takes up lots of pages, is attorneys. We have to have attorneys because no longer do we have the handshake concept that took away all the contracts. Yes, I'll do this. Yes, I'll fulfill my end of the bargain. Now you have contracts, of which my wife found out over a year ago, that an attorney that she talked to says, you know, contracts, even if signed, aren't worth the paper that you sign them. So even if you have a signed contract, it doesn't mean that it's valid. That's the world that we live in today. So we're going to teach people the simplicity of Christ, that when you say yes, you mean yes. When you say no, that you mean no. That you, when you make a promise, that you fulfill your promise. It won't take an attorney. And pages of long writing and very small print. So not having that very small print will take out the glass manufacturers. So think about a changed world that we'll live in at that time. How many that you can go through and take those things out? Do we have the foresight, the ability to see that? Do you think we'll have the drug companies? Or do you think that since we'll have the land rest and the plants and different herbs that God gave to us, that we even went through the concept of manna, that manna itself had, as coriander, has got healing properties that God intended. So we'll actually be teaching other people the nutritional value that comes from the food that God's provided. So you don't need drug companies and the chemical imbalances that man's chemicals give. That'll be a huge change. You won't need the military to build up stockpiles of weapons because it says that the swords will be beaten into plowshares. What will that be like? So you won't have defense contracts. You know, when everything's devoted to doing things God's ways, we might be shocked, even with the foresight we're given, at how things will massively change. And all that productivity and manpower and all that finance will go into things that are productive and how quickly it will be done. You know, I look back in hindsight and see what happened during World War II and how this country came together, and you had a manufacturing auto plant in Michigan. It was called the Willow Run Airport. The Willow Run Manufacturing. I believe it was Ford Manufacturing. And it became a manufacturing facility for airplanes. And I forget how many airplanes we were putting out. And women were working at that time as well. And 24 hours a day, we were putting airplanes out. Just the massive productivity on accomplishing something together as a country gave us the ability to defend ourselves. I saw recently in the Modern Marvels, as far as the road that we were able to build going up into the Alaskan territory in such a short time, because the Japanese were attacking us from that point, we were able to get our military up to Alaska to defend entrance into the U.S. in that way. and the marvels that took place in that kind of technology. You know, in the future, that kind of brain power and technology, in fact, a much more advanced technology, because we don't even know really the power sources that will be used. We've got power sources now that have come on in the right now that are on, that you can get a car that is actually able to run off of a battery. Then when that slows down, I don't know the entire concept of the hybrids, but then it'll kick off of the battery and work off of fuel. You know, what have we held back from there because of greed? What kind of other resources have we not harnessed yet? Years ago, someone was talking about harnessing the hydrogen atom. The resources that we probably have now are probably what we would call archaic because of the suppression. And many have thought about this and looked at this. There was years and years and years ago now, I remember an article coming out in Reader's Digest about someone that manufactured some kind of carburation system for an automobile that at that time, I think it was back in the 70s, that would take a car up to 100 miles a gallon at that time. How that patent was purchased and it was put away because you didn't want an automobile at that time that would go 100 miles a gallon. It would take people out of business. It just wouldn't happen. I've seen those things before. And we all understand because of the greed in mankind, there's been knowledge that has been suppressed. In the future, that won't be suppressed anymore, but we'll have sharper minds and rebuilding the waste places and the cities of this world and how quickly that will happen. That's the foresight that God has given to us along with the discernment to see the way that mankind operates right now and how we'll be used. And to me, that's exciting. I can't wait to have an unharnessed power, not that myself I know all these engineering feats, but to actually watch someone that's got the talent to be able to have their ability unleashed. It's a marvel as I watched even the Mackinac Bridge being built. At that time, it was the longest suspension system, bridge of its time, to watch how they wove the cables together to connect the lower peninsula with the upper peninsula. And for years, it was the longest suspension bridge of its time. There are two others that are currently larger, not in this country. But the massive feat that it took on just building that bridge and how the minds came together to put that bridge together. Incredible engineering that's out there that I marvel at how they do this and how God will bless this in the future. It's a vision that we've got. We're becoming perfected. In verse 6 it says that we're being perfected. This Greek word is called teleos. Tele, of future, television. Teleprompter, telescope. It means complete, full age, mentally and morally, spiritually mature. The same word that you'll find in Hebrews chapter 5, verse 14, for when you ought to be teachers. You know, those that are spiritually mature have by reason of use, teleos, are becoming perfected. Verse 7, he says, but we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, even the hidden wisdom which ordained before the world to our glory. Let's look at hindsight, some of experiences that we may have had. Can you remember when you were given the ability to understand God's way and how you first looked at it? I don't remember the exact thing, but what a difference it was for me in for 13 or 14 years keeping Sunday. And what it was for my mom, because my mom is the one that talked to our Lutheran pastor. So all of a sudden, mom looks at the church booklet or whatever writing was on the Sabbath, looks at her Bible, and kind of goes, this is a no-brainer. How do people not see this? I mean, without the church, there's a man that you know that's out there that will give $1,000. It's still out there, I believe. $1,000 if you can prove that in the Bible, the Sabbath was actually changed to Sunday. And even the Catholic system today will acknowledge, no, that's definitely this Saturday Sabbath is there. But you try to talk to someone else, and they'll throw out every excuse in the book Today's knowledge from scholars that are out there, ministers that are on TV, will say, well, no, that was changed because of Christ's resurrection on Sunday. Try to convince them that it wasn't resurrected on Sunday. I've had people say to me, you know, it's so interesting, and maybe you've said it too, if you count Friday to Sunday, how you get 3 days and three nights into there, I can't even, you get mathematicians that can't figure it out. So you and I will go, we come to the knowledge of this truth that's so simple now and easy to understand, and you're going, I've got to share this with my family. I mean, come on, how hard it is to, how is it this difficult? And so you'll give it to them for the first time, and they'll reject it. And then you'll think about it and go, well, maybe I just didn't say this, so I've looked at it this way. You're giving them a nice plate of a nice clean meal now, and they reject it. This is a beautiful steak with beautiful rice on it, and even the appearance looks so great, and it's so good for you. Why do you not take this? And they reject it. And then you thought, I forgot to put the parsley on it. So you dress it up a little bit more and give it back to them, and they still reject it. And you, how in the world can they not see that? And we come to the conclusion that God is the one that calls, no, really? Really? Nah, can't be. This is so easy to understand. How many have gone through that process? Probably all of us. And so we've come to the spiritual maturity to actually realize this. Now, one of the others, I didn't say it today as I was leading the songs, Sing Praises and Rejoice. I felt like titling it, Sing Praises and Rejoice. No, really. Because how many times do we get to Sabbath services, and as I mentioned, there's a certain truth to the wearing down of the saints, and you're going, you're telling me to rejoice? I just had, don't you realize, I just had a year of going through this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and you're telling me to rejoice. And I will tell you, I'm not telling you, God is. So if you and I kind of reject that and kind of going, he just doesn't understand, God is telling you, no, you don't understand. Because he's saying within all these trials that we go through and all these hardships, it's supposed to be teaching us and focusing in on the kingdom that's coming, and that our hearts can be uplifted to know that these things will stop. That's why when we read through the scriptures and Christ said, be of good cheer, I've overcome the world. And yet we're still stewing in misery because of our sins. And God's saying, be of good cheer. You're still on the path. You haven't given up. You're still hanging in there. And all this kind of encouragement, we're going, woe is me. And so we sing the songs, we review the scriptures to get refreshed with the hope that we'll be a little bit more foundationally established every year with these facts, that we really can maybe listen to the news for a little while and we can still be happy. We can look at it and go, you know, it's going to happen. Yeah, our economy is tanking. God, give me the wisdom to do what we can do. But you certainly, every meal, we can thank God for the blessings he's given. I thought about that the other day. As far as God taking care of me personally, ever since I've known it, this has been 58 years now, 59 going on June 1st. 59 years, whenever I've gone to a water tap and I've turned it on, water has come out every time, unless the plumber was working on the plumbing and I had to go to another tap. Every day, unless there was a day that I fasted, I've eaten something. I've had something to eat. I've had a comfortable bed with blankets to put over me. I pretty much have had peace. What is there not to be grateful for? I mean, there are other people I know that are members of God's church that can't say that, that have had to struggle. But if I'm going to look at that, shouldn't I even be doubly thankful? because they've had to go out and search for daily food or find water for their family. And maybe that's all that they had was to go to a river that was pretty much polluted. And how can they drink water from that? So it's been a struggle for our people, basically, in this country who've been so spoiled. How can we not rejoice? It's our perspective, isn't it? It's our insight. It's our field of vision. We are being perfected. We speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, even the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the world to our glory. So here's what we understand. God has had a plan, and He's had it all along. Here's what we don't know. I look forward to this answer, but there's no way I can answer it without a private interpretation. When was it that these two beings, and what was their relationship with, like before Jesus Christ took His form and became the Son of God? What was that relationship like before John 1:1? We don't know because the Bible doesn't say. When was it that they came up with the plan? How long did they coexist together before they came up with the idea and the plan that they wanted more into their family? We don't know that. All we know is the things that He has revealed to us. What do you mean love when people will say love? What do you mean by that concept? Well, that's another concept that's been totally perverted, and anything that's given by God that's good will be perverted. So love has been perverted. The concept of even the nature of God has been perverted. The truth has been totally perverted. This is the wisdom of God, that we understand His plan. Verse 8, it says, which none of the princes of this world knew, for had they had really known it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. And so you really see, in fact, when you look back at the circumstances that occurred at the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, that, you know, Pilate's wife had that dream. And she told her husband, this is not a good idea. She really felt uncomfortable about it. Pilate didn't know. You know, I wonder if you and I will be there when Pilate's resurrected, to see the look on his face when he finally finds it out. What do you think he'd say? I mean, I can see a man that was in authority and power, that understands authority, that will definitely understand authority when he's resurrected. I can see a man that's going to be on his knees with his face to the ground, not even feeling worthy to even look at his Creator's face. What do you think is going to happen? I can see a Creator, a loving Creator, that's going to pick the man up and go, just like everyone else. You know, you were the man that followed through with it. Everybody else here would have done the same thing. You're no different. In fact, they all really crucified me, as we've all done. We come to that recognition as well. So we're going to see, all of a sudden, you're going to see the look of devastation in a man. And then you're going to see that look of hope of someone that Christ is going to say, by the way, you know, you've been in the grave for a long time. I forgave you when I was back hanging on that stake. Maybe he'll show him the scripture that says, do you remember this? Maybe you weren't there, Pilate. Maybe your Roman soldiers told you this. But remember, I was hanging on that stake and I said, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they do. That meant you, Pilate. That meant the rest of them as well. We've got the spiritual insight, don't we, to understand this. Verse 9 says, eye has not seen. Eye has not seen. Here we go into this field of vision again. Eye has not seen, nor ear heard. Neither has it entered into the heart of man, and that's speaking of mankind as a whole, the things which God has prepared for those who love Him. How do I know this? Because of verse 10, God has revealed them to us through His Spirit. For the Spirit searches all things, just the deep things of God. But as I said, watch it that you take that into context. Because that's all things that God has given us to understand. And He's not given us everything to understand, or we would understand the concept of God before even the plan of salvation was unfurled to us. There are elements that we don't know about before creation. There are elements that we don't understand about in the future that will unfold. And I've told you before, our jaws are going to drop when you see these things. But yet we know so many things that are critical to salvation that the rest of this world doesn't know. One simple concept, by the way, very simple. But it's one of those that's propounded by the current Christian community. That's all you need to do is accept Jesus Christ. And it's a very important time that they go through. Some are very serious about this. As we've always said, some are sincerely wrong. But some are totally sincere about this. They recognize that Jesus Christ died for their sins. And they'll keep different days to acknowledge that fact. And they're not being judged now. So we have to make sure that we don't mock them. Because they're not being judged. We are. And sometimes we're held accountable for the way that we treat people. Instead of saying, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, we'll be indicting. Well, look at those people. Of course they do that. I did it. That's what I was taught. Until God opened up my mind too. So when I see that, instead of criticizing and griping at that, I'll be thankful for the knowledge that God has given to me and to know that God's not calling them yet. We know a mystery that the world doesn't know, yet they still understand about that sacrifice and they acknowledge it. And some try to live good moral values. They try to do that. They try to teach their kids good moral values without even having the Spirit of God. There's something that was passed down through the years. And what I thought about that is, how do these people understand some of these things? And it goes back to understanding who we are within history that's been rejected as well and even mocked because they don't understand that the birthright blessings that were given to Abraham now extend to that family of Israel, of which we believe that we're a part of. And part of that understanding is, if you know that, that certain teachings were passed down over the generations. So this nation has the basic understanding of the Ten Commandments and of Jesus Christ because of the heritage of this country. And now there are so many children being born now that don't understand the heritage of this country. They don't know the four faces on Mount Rushmore. And that can dwell over into the people of God. Because when some have asked, well, why do you talk about Herbert Armstrong? Because that was my heritage. And I don't need that. But that's what God did and used to call most of us into the church. And I'm going to share that and not be ashamed of that. Because he was a human being. And we do have that. We have learned that. For some that thought that he was actually God on earth and had that crumble before them, or some that he always thought he was just an evil man trying to make lots of money. That's a total falsehood as well. That's our heritage. And for me, it's important to understand my heritage so I can be so thankful, because I remember hearing a broadcast that changed my entire life. Because I always had the Bible. We had Bible. We always had a Bible. I was confirmed Lutheran, and one of my gifts was a Revised Standard Version of the Holy Bible. Didn't mean a whole lot to me. It was a book. I could put it on the shelf, and then somebody told me to blow my dust off of the Bible. And I remember that in my heritage. And you know what I'll say today? Maybe the same thing. Blow the dust off your Bible. We have one. Well, blow the dust off of it. What does that mean? Open it and start reading it. Listen to what God has to say. Maybe there are actually some physical elements there that if you do them, you'll actually be blessed. So there's natural blessings that come even by keeping the word and the laws of God, isn't there? Just naturally. So our nation is blessed despite this, because there are some actual things that we do that are good. It's acknowledged that the United States has been one of the most giving nations. I don't know how the other nations can fault us except for some of the evil that we expose through our entertainment industry or some of the other abhorrent things that we've done. but yet to give. We're in every country helping them through famines and helping other people when trouble arises. We send our ships and we send our help and we send our medical supplies. And I remember when it was mentioned to Colin Powell when he stepped on in France and we were being criticized by wanting to take over the world. Something that I can't see that. We purchased the land and we received the land because of God's blessing, but we didn't conquer it and keep it, did we? We didn't conquer Japan and then take over Japan. You know, there's fruits of history there. So I really appreciated it when Colin Powell, who was the chief of staff at that time, told the leadership of France, you know, the only land that we've ever wanted here is enough to bury the guys that died for you guys. Thank you, sir. Now, was there some evil intentions with others? Maybe. But this all came about as a result of God's blessing. We won the war not because of our power and our might. We won the war because of God's blessing and God's miraculous interventions. This is the insights that we're able to have. Verse 14 says, "The natural man does not receive the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him. Neither can he know them because they are spiritually discerned." We grab that concept, maybe not in totality, though. The rest of the world just has not been given this vision at this time. "But he who is spiritual judges all things, yet he himself is judged of no man." But maybe you might be criticized about keeping the wrong days and, you know, not understanding that these things were nailed to the cross. But you're not condemned. No one can condemn you. "For who has known the mind of God that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ." You know, another definition of this word foresight is the thoughtful regard or provision for the future. You know, one of those definitions was the power to foresee. We've got the power through the strength and power of God's Holy Spirit. Another definition is thoughtful regard or provision for the future. What does that bring to mind? I hope sometimes when you're listening and you hear it, it'll help us to relate this. I'm always listening for that myself. Oh, I remember a scripture that ties into that. So if it's talking about thoughtful regard or provision, now you could, certainly I have an advantage because I'm the one that prepared the sermon. So certainly we're tying in scriptures of the same, but we ought to be able to do enough Bible study that we'll hear one thing and it will tie into another thing. So when you think of thoughtful provision, what may you come up with? I've got Matthew chapter 6, verse 19. This will make sense when you see what it says. Matthew 6 and verse 19, it says here, "Lay up for yourselves, not for yourselves, treasures upon earth, where moth and rust does corrupt and where thieves break through and steal." My guess would be that most people probably have had something stolen from you before. Maybe something that was very precious. Or maybe something, in fact, I actually had someone send me, I don't know who did it, really, but it was boxes of books and DVDs on educating children and younger generation. I just never had time to really get into all that. It was some kind of series that someone had sent me. So they pretty much stayed in these boxes. There were books and DVDs and all kinds of information that I just never had time to go through. So they stayed in boxes within my office. And at one point when I moved, I started to move and termites got in there. And the only thing that they couldn't get was the DVDs because they were plastic. But all the books had been eaten into and the papers had been eaten into. I imagine we've all had pretty much experience with that too. Things that you had that you liked that got corrupted, that rusted out. So we've seen that example. Many of us still have got storage places. That is a little bit frustrating. And I've mentioned you. We've got a storage facility because we're in that apartment. I still don't have the things out of storage yet. Frankly, I don't even know what's in there. So we look at that as a little bit exciting in some ways because we're going to be opening boxes that are going to be like gifts. What's in here? Oh, look, I didn't know I had that. But there's going to be a hefty big yard sale too. It's stuff, isn't it? We all have stuff. We're all going to go to our graves with stuff, with things. So he uses this to show what the focus should be in regard or provision for the future. Saw something this week when it came to the pharaohs of Egypt and what they built for themselves and what they put in there. Did you know there was a time that you would not want to be a wife of the pharaoh? Because if he died, you were buried alive with him. You went with the pharaoh. Because it was thought in his afterlife that you're still going to need somebody. And so all of his provisions and foods and all kinds of things were put in these gigantic tombs because of a false concept. Maybe the woman's going to be resurrected as the same type of pharaoh. She's going to find out and then slap the guy. How dare you? I could have lived so many years after that, but because of your ignorance, and God will say, and yours, nobody gets away with it, do they? Because it says the point is in verse 21, where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be also. Do you know, I think about the heart, and I think about the times in hindsight that we look at our calling. And I hope that we can get just excited and be just as excited for anything that the church is doing now as we were in the past. To be as excited. You couldn't wait to get your next correspondence course. You know, can we be excited about really going back to our Bibles and looking at maybe something that we didn't see and we really want to study it more in depth now with the insight that God has given to us, the power that He's given to us. Let me read these scriptures again. Not that we necessarily want to just come up with something new. That happens in the wrong way too. But really with a depth that helps us to change our lives. And to grab onto something that we just didn't see before that will be stronger for the future purpose on teaching and helping other people as well. Where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be also. And that, in hindsight, is what Israel did not have. Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 29, oh, that there were such a heart in them. Verse 22 of Matthew 6 says, the light of the body is the eye. The light of the body is the eye. If that's the case, how more important is that we really spiritually see clearly? Now, some of us may not be able to see, and there are times I'll have to admit, and my wife has seen this for years. Maybe you have too. Why is he squinting? And there may be times, for whatever reason, maybe I'm lacking a certain vitamin. My mom looked into all different kinds of things, and she found out, I can't remember what the name was, but found out that there was things that you could take that actually strengthened your eyes. Some thought for carrots for years would help the eyes. I'm not totally certain of that. There's a balance in everything. I notice sometimes my eyes can be a little bit weaker than other times. And then all of a sudden they'll be okay. I've got to squint a little bit more. Things may be a little bit foggy. Some of you may get cataracts and other things that come upon to cloud your eyes. And then we can relate that even a little bit spiritually. Just like we do during the days of unleavened bread and relate those. Remember we've done that? We'll probably talk about that in the future. I remember going back and I can smile at that now when there were messages given about taking the spare tire out of my trunk, because whoever did that one time, he had a flat tire, took the flat tire out, and he found a sandwich underneath there that was all moldy, but he had forgot about that, so he used that analogy to say those sometimes are the hidden sins. I remember one time I got a gift that was actually a cookie. And I put it in my box filled with things to save. A cookie. I totally forgot. After the days of unleavened bread, I'm going to... There's a cookie. And we've used that to go, you know, sometimes we have those sins that are exposed a little bit later on. And that's true. That does happen in our lives. And the spiritual is more important than the physical. But we've used all these analogies. But he's saying, if this is that important, if the light of the body is the eye, then spiritually it's important that we see clearly. These are extremely important topics. If therefore your eye is single, if it's clear, then your whole body will be full of light. If you really understand the concepts and what God is teaching, then you'll be able to see clearly. You know how what that relates to? I don't have this even written in my notes, but it just reminded me of a scripture about seeing clearly. When you've got a problem or an issue with someone else, what does the Bible say? You better make sure that when you see so clearly to cast the mote out of someone else's eye, you cast the beam out of your eye first. You better come before that person. Oh, I tell you, we've got every reason sometimes to be so aggravated. And well, you know what we'll say? We'll say, just like the teens that we did when we were teens, this is different. It's different. This person really ticked me off. And I've got every right to go to them and do da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It doesn't change what God had said. Before you get that steamed up, you better get steamed up enough at yourself to cast that beam out of your own eye. And then come in spiritual meekness, as Galatians 6 says, if you want to help somebody else out. Or is it all about you and your feelings? Or mine and my feelings? Oh, somebody hurt me, or somebody offended me, or somebody bothered me. And who are they? And then Psalm says, blessed are they who love your law, for they will not be offended. Maybe you and I will have the attitude, you know something? It really seems pretty clear to me that they understood what they did. But even Stephen said, after they were clobbering him with stones, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they do. And I've analyzed that, really? They didn't know that they were tossing the stones at someone and killing them? Yeah, they did. But they didn't understand the spiritual concept called the love of God that would have prevented them from doing that. And that's the attitude that both he and Jesus Christ and others came to see in their spiritual development and learning. So you've probably heard of investments in the futures market. See, we're investing in God's futures market. The futures, and I'm not incredibly knowledgeable about that, but you know, there's those that invest in, say, beef and corn and a lot of different things that are out there in what they call the futures market. You're investing, for instance, in whether there's going to be a good crop that comes out, or that there's going to be a good, maybe a beef market that's going to come out. And there's actually those that will invest the other way. They'll invest whether there's going to be a bad market. I'm not totally sure how that works, but you could actually make money if the market goes south because you've so-called bet or invested on that. Now, if you look at that physical element, here's where we're investing. We're investing on God's futures market. I would say out of all the investments that you could ever have, that would be a no-brainer. There's an absolute, I would say, 100% plus guarantee on return on that investment. Can't go wrong there. So we must invest wisely in the future. Let's look at those who did in Hebrews chapter 11. We'll see some of our brethren that I look forward to seeing hopefully soon. This would be David. This will be Elijah. And all the questions. John the Baptist. And all the questions. You know, be careful on what you ask here. You come up to John the Baptist and you ask, by the way, you are the greatest one who ever lived except for Jesus Christ. What in the world did you do? John's going to go, do you have some time? because there wasn't a book written about John the Baptist. But if you were the greatest person who ever lived except for Jesus Christ, you did a lot. So for some reason, God saw fit not to put the book of John the Baptist in the Bible, but enough to give us things that he did do. Some have questioned whether he turned the hearts of the fathers to the children. I'll give you the answer. It's in the Bible. He did. Now, it doesn't say that he did, but it says the angel came before his parents and says, you're going to have a son, and this is what he's going to do. So we either have an angel that lied or a prophecy that failed. And it didn't say that that happened. So what's the spiritual meaning and the depth from that that we might get? It could be it turned Israel back to the fathers of old and the teachings that they had. So whatever it is, the scripture was fulfilled on what John the Baptist was going to do. Hebrews 11, verse 13, these all died in faith, not having received the promises. By the way, you could also say these all died in faith and they were still imperfect at the time they took their last breath. Not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off and were persuaded and convinced of them, and they embraced them. And that's what those of us that have done today. I see a people of God, if you're looking at me the same way. You know, yesterday was so interesting, being on just a little interjection here, being on the Skype webinar with the Australian people. So it's a couple of things that I learned for sure. We used to have an overall Skype service where they would call me and we'd connect up. And now I'm ready to connect with them at 20 minutes to 8 and nothing's happening. No, 10 to 8. And finally I get a call and I realize just as the call came in, I'm supposed to connect with them, not them with me. And there was a little email that says you can connect up to this webinar, connect up. And I just started laughing. I totally had forgot about that. And at the point that they called, I said, I remember, I'm supposed to connect with you. Hang up and I'll connect right with you. And I did. The problem is, though, when you do a webinar, I don't see any of the brethren. So I get the webcam that's looking at me, and they can see me. Do you know who I look at? Me. I'd really rather not watch me. But I noticed this intense look that I intend to have, so I apologize for that. If I can have this intense look, it'd be so hard, because I thought I was being hard on myself. The intensity that comes out, but there's a seriousness about God's laws and God's ways that I really hope that we understand and really see the importance of what we're doing in this investment, because this, I try to give a picture on what this is going to be like, and I can only try to give flavors and tastes. And I can't wait till it happens myself. There are so many people that I want to talk to and find out the history and what they went through and what they did. David, my name's Eric, or whatever God gives to us at that time, how wonderful that's going to be. And that we won't have to worry about time. We won't have to be worrying about wearing out. You know, can we have a meeting with you? Where? Maybe over on this planet over here. However God opens up the door to all the possibilities and wonderments that he gives to us to see, do we really see this? It says they were persuaded, they were convicted, they embraced them, and they confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on earth. That's another hindsight that I take a look at. I once felt, just like I did with that college and that campus in Pasadena and Big Sandy, that was mine. That was mine. And I walked on that as if it was mine, and I cared for it the same way. And I was instrumental, and I was on custodial, so I helped clean it. And watched others as they picked through the weeds in that dachondry and how beautiful it was, and I got to be a part of that. That was mine. Now, I recognized that it was God's. But since I was called by God, it was mine too. And I took it that way, and I was thankful for it. But I lost it. You lost it. Or did we really? It's just stuff, isn't it? And the most important part that I got from that is what I learned from it. Not any physical thing, which was so wonderful. being able to be a part of that, but what I took from it. When I was able to go back to the Old Testament and see that there was a beautiful temple that existed that was more beautiful than anything that we've ever had. A temple called the one that Solomon built. That God also allowed that to come down, not just once, not just twice, but three times. It came down to nothing. And you realize, you know, that was God's too. It was dedicated to God. So was the one in Pasadena where I said, and you can remember, dedicated to the honor and glory of what? You can fill in the blank. The great God, and how we all felt that way. God, how could you allow that to happen? Now you understand what those Israelites that cared. You know, there was certain Israelites back in that cared. Now you know exactly how they felt when their nation came down too, don't we? Because some of them were spared as they were taken into captivity and allowed to continue. And some were given good positions within that kingdom, such as Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were given high spots because of what God allowed and what God did. We can understand now as we see a nation that's around us that's going down, how we'll make comments of, I feel like I'm a stranger. You know, I was talking to that manager who felt he disassociated himself from the conservative movement because he goes, that's a bunch of lies. It's not truthful. This doesn't feel like my country anymore. But where do you go? You know, sometimes when people didn't like it, they went to Canada. Canada's worse. It's all corrupt around us and there's nowhere else to go now. So our eyes are focused on a better country, one that lies just ahead of us. They confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims, for those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a country, and you and I do. It's called the kingdom of God, that not many people understand about that. And if truly they had been mindful of that country from whence they came up, they may have been have the opportunity of return. They look at many cases at Egypt. But they are aware of the principle that said, no man having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom. So we look forward. Verse 16 says, they desire a better country, a heavenly one. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. See, these are our brothers and sisters in Christ. They are also part of that first fruits. And this is the part of God's plan that we're going to be going on, starting in, once again as a review and as a reminder. But not same old, same old. As Mr. Horchak pointed out, and I'm so grateful sometimes when you hear somebody give a message and you go, you know, I've really been thinking about that. What have we learned? How much have we grown? And can this be a better Passover? Can this be something different? We're really making progress instead of being, yeah, we go through Passover, then the night to be observed and just kind of carry on through the holy days is if it's just some kind of normal procedure that the church goes through? Or are we ready to take it in and really grow and learn this coming year? Hebrews 12, verse 1. We'll close here. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. See, I look upon the people of God that I'm grateful to be able to serve because all of you have got such a wide variety of experiences. No matter if you're older than me or younger than me, we can all learn from each other. We've all gone through different things, and I love to talk to people when they share, when you share your experiences on what you've gone through, because I can maybe relate it to something. And we can relate to each other that, you know, nothing really is new. We've all been through it. I went through this kind of pain, and we can tease about that. Well, that ain't nothing. You know, I had one root canal. Well, I had all four of them pulled out, and they're all impacted. And my brains came out with it. Whoever, who knows? You know, we all have the. But you know what we have in common? Pain. We all know what pain feels like, and it doesn't feel good. We like to avoid it, but we can all talk about experiences of where we've gone through that. And I've mentioned to you just thinking about that. About how you can get a slice at the end of your, or put it more, that one on the thumb, and you recognize more and more of how important that thumb is, because if you get a sliced thumb and you try to pick up something, what do you get? Pain. And one little thing on your body. Hebrews 12, verse 1, seeing, here it is again, how many times the Word of God will bring up these aspects of vision. Wherefore, seeing we are compassed with so great a cloud of witnesses, that you and I, who have seen God's Word unveiled in our lives in many different ways, let's lay aside every weight and the sin that does so easily beset us, the one that we conquer through prayer and fasting, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Looking, here's the word again, in the vision aspect, looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him, this is how he was able to endure. He saw a picture. Did he want to go through that? He suffered greatly at the knowledge of what he was going to have to endure. He saw that. He was the one, the only one that saw really the way he was going to be killed and how he was going to be so disfigured. No one else can say that. He endured it, despising the shame, and is now set down at the right hand of the throne of God, where he is to this day. For consider he who endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest you be wearied and faint in your minds. The wearing down of the saints. Brethren, you and I are going to get weary. Physically, we can get weary. You know what happens when you get wearied? What I can't wait till? This day right here. This day, though it's a day that I expend some physical energy, I'm physically rejuvenated. Do you know how, if you ask that question, just being with you, there's a spiritual rejuvenation, because I'm looking at and talking to a people that have been there and that have done that. And we're all on this together. I couldn't imagine doing this by myself. Could you imagine being by yourself with no one else, with other examples, no one else to encourage you? Every time I see someone older than me, I see someone that's endured that much longer than I have. And you realize, I can do it. I can do it. You don't have to be so wearied, though that happens to us. It says, lest you be wearied and faint to the point where we just let it go. We can't do that. Do we have that vision to see this? Let's talk about it more and more as we're able to fellowship with each other. Let's encourage each other to the point where when you see somebody with a physical disability, this is what I try to say to them. Hang in there, because you're going to get your new spiritual body in the near future. It's going to hurt now a little bit, but we'll pray for each other that God alleviates that pain and gives us the ability to endure it. And that's why we have our prayer requests out there. But I can't wait to see the vision of some of us that are right here that have even trouble walking or getting up, doing your backflips. Isn't that going to be a time where we're going to laugh and rejoice so much? That's what we have to look forward to. Can we see?